It just had to be philosophical about being back up here now with nothing much to do except wave the heather about. If weather was people, this storm would be filling in time wearing a cardboard hat and a hamburger hell. Currently, it was observing three figures moving slowly over the moor, converging with some determination on a bare patch where the standing stone stood, or usually stood, though just at the moment it wasn't visible. It recognised them as old friends and connoisseurs, and conjured up a brief unseasonal roll of thunder as a form of greeting. This was totally ignored.
"The bloody stone's gone," said Granny Weatherwax, "however many there is of it."
Her face was pale. Might also have been drawn. If so, then it was by a very neurotic artist. She looked as though she meant business, bad business.
"Light the fire, Magrat,"
she added automatically.
"I dare say we'll all feel better for a cup of tea," said Nanny Og,
mouthing the words like a mantra. She fumbled in the recesses of her shawl.
"With something in it," she added, producing a small bottle of applejack.
"Alcohol is a deceiver and tarnishes the soul," said Magrat virtuously.
"I never touch the stuff," said Granny Weatherwax. "We should keep a clear head, Gaither."
"Just a drop in your tea isn't drinking," said Nanny. "It's medicine. It's a chilly old wind up here, sisters."
"Very well," said Granny, "but just a drop."
They drank in silence. Eventually Granny said,
"Well, Magrat, you know all about this coven business. We might as well do it right. What do we do next?"
Magrat hesitated. She wasn't up to suggesting dancing naked. "There's a song," she said, "in praise of the full moon."
"It ain't full," Granny pointed out. "It's, what's name? Bulging."
"Gibbous," said Nanny obligingly.
"I think it's in praise of full moons in general," Magrat hazarded. "And then we have to raise our consciousness. It really ought to be full moon for that, I'm afraid. Moons are very important." Granny gave her a long, calculating look.
"That's modern witchcraft for you, is it?" she said.
"It's part of it, Granny. There's a lot more." Granny Weatherwax sighed.
"Each to her own, I suppose. I'm blowed if I'll let a ball of shiny rock tell me what to do."
"Yes, bugger all that," said Nanny. "Let's curse somebody."
The fool crept cautiously along the nighttime corridors. He wasn't taking any chances either. Magrat had given him a graphic account of Gribo's general disposition, and the fool had borrowed a couple of gloves and a sort of metal wimple from the castle's store of hereditary chainmail. He reached the lumber room, lifted the latch cautiously, pushed the door, and then flung himself against the wall. The corridor became slightly darker as the more intense darkness inside the room spilled out and mingled with the rather lighter darkness already there. Apart from that, nothing. The number of spitting, enraged balls of murderous fur pouring out through the door was zero. The fool relaxed and slipped inside. Gribo dropped on his head. It had been a long day. The room did not offer the kind of full life that Gribo had come to expect and demand. The only point of interest had been the discovery, around mid-morning, of a colony of mice who had spent generations eating their way through a priceless tapestry history of Loncra and had just got as far as King Murren, 709 to 745, who met a terrible fate. When they did, too. King Murren's fate involved a red-hot poker, a privy, 10 pounds of live eels, a 3-mile stretch of frozen river, a butt of wine, a couple of tulip bulbs, a number of poisoned eardrops, an oyster, and a large man with a mallet. King Murren didn't make friends easily. Gribo had sharpened his claws on a bust of Loncra's only royal vampire, Queen Grimnir, the Impaler. 1514 to 1553. 1553 to 1557. 1557 to 1562, 1562 to 1567, and 1568 to 1573. He had performed his morning ablutions on a portrait of